Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, it's another week of Comics Talk Comedy. Yeah. Jesse, how are
it
you?
It is. I can't hear you.
Can't hear me?
Well, I can't hear you. Okay, now I can. Sorry. It's good to see you.
You as
hear
well,
you.
Man. Yeah. I haven't seen you this week. Did you do any comedy?
I had some shows this week. I had some ups and downs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You had trivia on Tuesday?
I did trivia. That was the only... And then I hosted the contest last night.
And how was that?
It was okay. We had like 25 people there.
I saw Sarah Lee advanced.
Yeah, pretty much.
She was pretty excited.
Four people didn't show up.
Oh, four of the contestants?
Yeah.
So was there an actual contest, or did the other people automatically advance?
I advanced everyone that stayed to the end.
So she still took it as a victory, though.
Yeah.
That's good. You know, just attending and staying on, that's a victory, right?
Because a couple people, because Stuart Swanson was in the second round, he's moving.
He's moving
and
to Chicago, huh?
John Stenning, too. I don't know where he's going.
I'm gonna miss Stu.
He's moving, too. So
oh, wow.
We had extra couple of spots.
Do you think it's because they had to compete in the contest that they decided to move?
Just move. Mm-hmm. Not face that second round.
Get out of here.
It's easier that way.
That's so, Sarah Lee. She's a buzzsaw of comedy.
Yeah, she was actually pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, she's funny.
That's the first time I think I've seen her.
Yeah, I think she's going to be great.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
She has a good comic look.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
she looks like she would be a comic.
She strikes you as a stand-up comedian right away.
Yeah.
Totally.
So where else did you perform?
Let's see. Thursday night I had the Palace. I was headlining the Palace for Maria and Company.
Oh, okay.
And I just got to see Dewey, which was great.
Right.
And he's such a sweetheart. And it was a little bit of a weird show. There was like... couple meetup groups there, and a lot of people
That's
were doing
do,
crowd
right?
work and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Dewey had a bit where he's talking about gigawatts or gigabytes.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, but anyway, he changed it to the N-word and then the rest of the word. And, you know, he was doing his thing, and then Maria Herman went up to host after him and repeated it.
Oh, and she's very white.
She's very white. And that... It was a very uncomfortable moment,
yeah.
And then she immediately brought me up to headline, do like a half an hour. And I was trying to dig out of that thing, you know, I was like,
Did you bring it up?
I did,
okay.
I did.
You didn't say the word, though, did
no,
you?
No, but I was like, hey, guys, it means something different in Australian. Give her a break. And anyway, so I don't want to blame the audience or the crowd
or
whatever, but I didn't have my favorite set of the world, that's
yeah.
for sure. It was a little uneven. The Black Cats Matter was the best bit that I did. Like,
oh,
that one
cool.
really hit good, but I saved it till the end, so okay. it was at least I had a good finish, you know?
Right. And you did a half hour?
I did about it. I'm probably trying to get off early. I don't know. I think I did 30. But
okay.
Anyway, so that was a little uneven. And Tony Calabresi was there filming it, and he's like, you want to copy that? And I was like, no, you can burn that. You can get rid of that. But the cool thing was last night, I got to do another show for him and redeem myself, which was nice.
What show was that?
Well, this was really unexpected. I didn't know what we were doing. It was like a fundraiser for this Rotary Club, and it was at this Portuguese Hall or something in Point Loma. So when you don't expect much, you know, you go there, what am I doing? I'm opening or something? He's like, no, you're featuring, and there's 400 people here.
Holy crap.
So it was this huge hall full of Rotarians. And I don't know, it's weird. I'm more comfortable maybe in front of a bigger crowd because I was looser, I was riffing more, I just was myself. Whereas in front of the 40 people at the Palace, I was really just, I don't know, it was tightened up and it just wasn't working. So that set, I was like, I hope you film that one because I want to use that. That's
did he
a good
say he
one.
Did?
Yeah, he said he would edit it.
Who else was on the show?
There was this quartet, this like comedy quartet, these guys that sing like beautiful like barbershop quartet music and do sort of commentary that's funny.
Then they went up last?
They went up first.
Oh,
it was like Tony and then them and then Dana Daniels, I believe is her name, and then myself. And then a magician went after me.
That's an interesting show.
Yes, he had to do like 40 at the end of magic.
Wow.
But it went really well. I was really, really happy with it. And I was telling Taylor in the break here that having everyone working clean, it made it less pressure. I was like, okay, I don't have to out-dirty anyone.
Yeah.
I have to out-crowd work anyone. We're just on the
you
same...
You normally try to out-dirty people?
Well, you feel that pressure sometimes on those shows, especially the Palace if Zach is hosting or something.
Yeah.
The tone is set for like... we're going to get rugged up here, you know, and I feel weird about it sometimes where it's like, I want to do something, but I have to do what the crowd wants, you know?
Right.
And in this case, it just feels like you can just do what you want to do because we're all on the same playing field. Like, we got to be. In fact, they had warned me backstage to be clean, and then the person went on before me was dirtier than me. So I was like, okay, everything is going to be easy.
Is that a comic? She was a comic,
yes.
Or he?
Yeah, she was.
Okay.
She wasn't filthy or anything, but she cursed a couple times, and I was like, oh, okay. Well, everything, it's all good.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that was good.
Well, that was it?
That's all I got.
Well, yeah. Then why don't we go ahead and bring in our guest.
All right.
Taylor Tomlinson,
ladies
everybody.
And gentlemen.
Hi.
Taylor Tomlinson.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for the round of applause. That was so nice.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so how was your week? Did you go up? You're at the Madhouse this weekend, right?
My week was good, yeah. I'm at the Madhouse tonight. I was supposed to be there last night, but I had to cancel. I was at the Improv Comedy Lab.
What's
next
that?
Door to the Hollywood Improv.
Oh,
it used
okay.
to be like this black box thing. I hadn't performed in that room since they redid it, and now it's like a really nice little like small stage and like a bar area.
Oh,
it looks
cool.
Really great.
So Hollywood Improv has two rooms now?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And they have for a while. They had the lab for a while, but it was like a smaller like black box type room.
Okay.
And I haven't done that room since they remodeled it, and it looks really nice. So
cool.
I did a Montreal showcase there last night. And then
that's for Just for Laughs festival?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So
how did that go?
I think it went well. I went first and I didn't really watch anybody else because if I'm going up in the middle, I'll watch the people before me just to like get a feel of the room and stuff.
Sure.
But if I've already gone up, I don't want to watch people afterward because then I'm just kicking myself for what
I
didn't do.
Or
like, oh, they're more comfortable than me. Or
well,
whatever.
It's really hard going first. You have no idea what they like.
Right. I mean, the host did get up and do like 7-8 minutes. So that was nice.
Yeah.
So it wasn't totally cold, but it was good. It was a good crowd, and it was, you know, sold out with whatever, however many people could
was
fit
like
in there, like 25 or 30. I don't know. I'm really bad at estimating room counts. I'm a lady. I'm not good at numbers. No,
but it's a small room, so it works like kind of like we were talking about Twigs, that kind of space.
Yeah, okay. really good room for comedy. So, yeah, and it was fun.
How much time they make you do for?
Five minutes. Tight five.
Clean stuff that would be like for TV or no, whatever you want.
Yeah, whatever you want. Whatever you want. I just, you know, it's in Canada, so they're like, don't do anything regional, maybe.
Okay.
Like, don't be like, LA's the worst because yada, 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 gluten. And then, you know, I've heard like they like autobiographical stuff and whatnot.
Okay.
So I was like, all right, we'll just go in and do those 5 minutes.
Isn't that what everybody likes now, really? I think
that's sort of the
direction we've gone in with comedy. It's like it's got to be really personal.
Yeah, I'm trying that.
It makes it tough to be, you know, to do observational comedy now. Because
when you don't have a life, it makes it harder. That's why, like, when I was taking the bus, I got some good bus material.
Yeah,
I was, like, getting myself out and doing different things.
Totally.
Like, it's tough when you, like, do the same thing every day to, like, talk about your life and stuff.
Oh, my gosh, it's so hard. That's what I'm having trouble with right now, because all I do is I do comedy, and when I'm not doing comedy, I'm traveling to do comedy. When I'm not traveling to do comedy, I am in bed emotionally preparing myself
to go do comedy. Yeah.
So, like, you know, there's not a lot.
So what do we have to do? Go out and do regular things with normal people and figure that out?
100%. That's like, I would do that. I would, when you were saying that, I was like, I should take the bus. But the whole time I would be like, what's funny about this bus? Like, I'm not even a person anymore.
That's true.
Yeah, you just have to get out of your element, which is hard, you know? That's why it's like, I'm in this funk for like the last year of like writing new material. It's just hard.
Some of it's coming from TV and food. Like some of the material you've got is almost Hedberg-y. So, like, to personalize it, what do? Be like, I love TV, and then do the bit kind of thing?
I don't know either.
I'm just thinking.
That's, like, what I've been, like, because I haven't really been motivated to do comedy. Because, like, when I don't write anything new, it's like, I don't want to do the same old crap again.
Oh, it's so hard.
I know.
I feel the same way. Like, even going to the store sometimes, I'm like, oh, I got to come up with something.
Right.
I'll be thinking of something on the drive up there to talk about just because I don't want to do the same thing.
Well, yeah, because otherwise you almost feel like you're just wasting stage time.
Right?
Yeah. Like, I already knew that worked.
Oh, well, I mean, unless it's revising it or something, it's kind of like, what am I doing up here?
Yeah.
Spinning the wheels.
Yeah, because I remember when I first started going to the store, you'd always see the same guys doing the same crap. And like,
right, I never understood it.
Now I've become that guy.
I used to do that too for a while, and then I was like, wait, this isn't what I'm up here for.
Yeah.
You know, you still do some stuff that you know is going to work so you don't bomb. But I feel like if you don't try something new, at least at the store,
yeah,
you know,
it's
there's
definitely
other spots
a workout,
too, but
workout
it feels
room
like it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And because, like, if you're not watching the people, you can at least still hear their material. Like, for me, and it's like, I don't want them to see me doing the same stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, at this point, you're talking about bombing. It's like, I'm more afraid to bomb than I was when I first started.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when I first started, I would always try new shit. Now it's like, do I want to try this? Do I want to risk it not going well?
Yeah.
So, like, I'm in that phase right now. You
like,
know?
I figured out the secret. Why would I go back?
Right. That's kind of what it is.
I know. That's true, huh?
So it's hard, like, to take. That's why it was fun, like, going up together because, like, we're more willing to take chances that way, you know?
That's a good point. You know, maybe that's worth doing just for that reason, that you're willing to riff. And if something doesn't work, the other person can save it a little bit more.
Yeah. And then we can both work on new material, you know?
So. A lot of what I've been doing with the new stuff is opening with it, like Paul Legato was talking about. Just, A, to get it out of the way, but also to try to sell it harder. Like, you're forced to sell it as hard as you can, or it's going to flop because it's right at the beginning.
Mm. Right.
And then, of course, you bury yourself for the rest of the set.
Yeah.
But I used to bury that material in the middle of the set, thinking I'll open strong, close strong, and I'll do my new stuff in the middle, but then I would not sell it hard enough and because I didn't believe in it yet.
Right.
And I felt like it would flop automatically.
Or do you ever have the thing where you put it in the middle and you open with something that works and it doesn't go as well because you don't believe in it anymore?
Right.
And in the middle, new part goes great.
Totally.
And then you just end like tepidly on an old bit you don't like anymore.
That's so true.
Yeah,
they can really sense it when you're tired of it. I mean, my closer, I'm so tired of it. It's like I'm just going through the motions.
We all are at this point.
Yeah, I hear you. I sometimes don't even use it. Like if I can avoid it. I mean, we did the duo set. I didn't use any of those closers, so.
Yeah,
it's more satisfying when you can have a strong set without something like that.
Right.
Feels like a crutch.
My biggest thing, too, is with new material, sometimes when you get it, it goes really well the first time. You never can get it to go that well ever again.
It's hard to bottle that enthusiasm again. Yeah.
So it's hard, but,
well, going to break.
I think we're going to break. I think we have a little more time. I think the clock is off.
It is? So this is just a musical interlude?
Well, I think we're going to break. But you can tell.
Taylor, did you know that he could play keyboard like this?
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, we got more with Taylor coming back.
Today's episode is brought to you by Film in Diego, a six-part series airing Thursday night at 11 p.m. on KPBS. Film in Diego highlights San Diego's growing film community, diverse film festivals, film history, award-winning films, and filmmakers and talent. This show is not only educational and inspiring, it will show you how diverse and talented San Diego filmmakers are. Think film and TV are just an L.A. thing? Think again. To see full episodes and clips, visit kpbs.org and search the words Film in Diego.
Talk, talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Second segment.
That's actually him on the guitar, too, Taylor.
Very talented.
So talented.
Isn't that
very
talented. He's like Prince. He can do everything.
Thank you.
Plays every instrument.
He was actually at the Warriors game the other day. Prince.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was it the artist formerly known as? Or
no. It was actually Steph Curry. Prince.
Nice.
So, Taylor, you're up in L.A. now, right?
Yes.
How's that going?
Good. I like it. I like it better than I thought I would. I mean, I'm out of town so often that I feel like sometimes when I'm gone for like a whole, like I was gone like all of January. I wasn't like at my apartment at all. And I was like, why am I even doing that? Like, why am I paying
the apartment?
LA rent?
Yeah.
But then I'll be there and I'll be there for a while and I'll do spots and, you know, I'm passive at some clubs now and stuff. And I'm like, okay, great. This is good. It's good that I'm here. But yeah, it's just when I'm on the road and doing other stuff that I'm like, what am I?
When you're on the road, are you mostly doing college tours or are you doing different things?
Yeah. I mean, I'm doing different things, but mostly colleges right now. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And is that was from NACA or is that from
NACA?
Okay. Yeah. And what about the show that you were on? I mean,
Last Comics.
Is there other tour stuff from that?
If you made top five, you went on a very long tour. Like the top five, I was in top 10, so I just barely missed it. And the top five, like immediately went on a tour after the show
together
aired.
Or?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. And I think they all did, I don't know, probably like 20 or 25 or whatever. And they went on this huge tour and I think they were on a tour bus for a good portion of it. And
oh, wow.
I looked at the schedule. It was pretty crazy to the point where, and I signed the contract and stuff. So I knew what it entailed
because
you have to agree to it when you go on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And like in retrospect, I was kind of bummed because I was like, oh, that would have been good stage time and kind of fun and go on the road. And then I saw the schedule and I looked at what I had booked for that time and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not really losing out on stage time or money by missing out
That's
on
good.
These tour shows.
It would have been a kind of a brutal thing.
Yeah, it would have been. Yeah. I think it would have been pretty brutal, especially for me because I'm very like socially anxious, and being on a tour bus with other people for that long would have really been like.
Did you get along with those people, or did you know any of them, or you just go in, you do your thing, and you get off when you do that show?
I mean, yeah, everyone was really nice, but we were all just kind of sitting around for most of it, like waiting to be taken to another room to be interviewed, or waiting to be called on stage, or. You know, waiting to be fed when or shepherded to the bathroom like sheep. Like it was, yeah, I don't know. People always ask me how it was, and sometimes I'm like, it was great, good opportunity, and yeah. I mean that. And then sometimes I'm just like, they're like, did you enjoy it? Somebody asked me at a college in Montana last week, they're like, did you have fun? And I was like, not really.
Way. How could you?
I was just uncomfortable for a lot of it.
Feel like you're being judged the whole time, right?
Exactly, yeah, and they're just kind of swarming around, taking videos of you, like, interacting with other, like, and you're like, oh, I don't.
That's not the part we like about comedy.
No, I liked performing, that part was fun, but, you know, the, like, green room footage you kind of saw, where we were all, like, sitting around, like, shooting the shit and laughing, like, I kind of stopped trying after the first round. I just started watching Scandal on my phone in
the
corner.
Did they have to script those moments for you? Like, be like, hey, will you laugh a little bit?
No, I don't. They didn't do that, which I don't know if other shows do that. But, I mean, they did some things where they, like, brought a couple people in to, like, talk to each other or, like, kind of riff with each other and do, like, a little skit. Not like, you know, they were just improvising, but just like, you're a character.
Okay.
Let's put you in these chairs,
cool.
You know?
Do you think they had to cut out a lot of footage of you just watching TV on your phone?
Probably. Well, Scandal's a different network, I think. So I was like, they won't get this at all. Like, if I'd been watching, you know, Parks and Rec or something, they might have been like, look at this. Watching NBC
look
on
what
NBC.
She does in her free time.
Yeah.
So you're doing a lot of colleges now. Did any of the kids recognize you from the show? Because I don't think they're... Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly who watches last. I mean, I'm a fan because I was a comic, but as like normal people, because they keep like canceling it and bringing it back, so it can't be that popular. But you say a lot of people do recognize you from the show.
Yeah. Actually, I've been kind of surprised. It's been nice to go to colleges, and some kids are like, I watched you on Last Comic, and you were really great, and that's really cool. Some kids will come up to me and take pictures of me and be like, my parents told me I should come watch you because they watched you on Last Comic, and I'm like, thank you very much, Mom. Like, so that's
good. Crossing generational lines there.
There we go.
Getting different fans.
As far as for you doing the colleges, it doesn't matter if there's four people or 4,000. You're still getting paid the
same,
right?
Exactly. Uh-huh. I did one at noon in Boston with another comic, Guy Branum, and we were waiting. It was noon, and nobody had shown up at the school. And this was like a year ago or something. And we were like, okay. No one's going to show up and we're still going to get paid. This is awesome. We don't have to do the show. And so then we were like, you know, it would be funny if we went on stage and we told it one joke into the microphone so we could say this is how much we've been paid for one joke. And I went up and I told a joke, and then he went up and he told a joke. And in the middle of him telling his joke, a couple people walked by, saw someone on stage, and came in.
Oh, no.
And so we had to perform for like 12 people. Yeah. So
like an hour?
It was fine. It was fun. Usually it's an hour if you're by yourself, but it was just he and I, so we each did 30.
For like three people?
Yeah, for like maybe 10.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, by the end of it.
Were the 10 people enjoying it at least?
I think so. They were as well as any small group of people.
We've heard of those before. We've had we've had guests on that talk about these. They're called nooners, apparently, right? You guys call them that?
Yep.
And who was it? Scalero?
Yeah.
Who was talking about?
He did it in a cafeteria where people were like, your sausage sandwich is up. And he's on stage standing on milk crates.
And he would repeat the order. He'd be doing a joke and they'd be like, sausage sandwich!
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I've done that too, just these massive... you know, cafeteria like buildings, and there's just it's terrible sound system, just like someone does karaoke on Fridays and they just brought it in. And I was doing one at like 5 o'clock, and they were like, this is just the time people are eating, so it's hard to get people out, so we just put you. I was like, really? They're like, yeah, we have a black box. And I'm like, why don't we do that? And they're like, well, we had Jeff Dye here and he did the black box. And I was like, why don't we just do that? And they're like, well, we had to take Jeff Dye into this cafeteria, have him stand on stage and go, he's going to do comedy in the Black Box. Everybody come with us. And then like 10 people followed them over to the Black Box.
Didn't work out.
So, well, I mean, I would rather perform for 10 people in that Black Box than people eating. But,
yeah,
you know.
So what do you think of those gigs? Are they basically just for money, or do you think you get exposure or anything for the career out of it?
You know, I think it really depends. The shows that I've been doing have gotten so much better. Like when I first started doing them, I don't know if it was the region I was doing or, you know, the fact that I was like dirt cheap and nobody knew who I was and I didn't have any credits, which is still, I'm still not like, you know, that I don't have that many credits, but
you only need
still
that one major credit though, right? Do you need a lot more credits than that?
I don't know. I really
can't imagine why. So, I mean, Dad Fans made a whole career off of that credit.
That's
right?
True. Yeah.
Well,
but I mean,
hustler,
he won.
Though. He's a hustler.
He's a hustler, but she's also really good. So
that's,
I feel like that
very nice.
Balances things out a little bit. You know what I mean? It's like you have the credit, but you can live up to the credit.
Right.
That's a good thing.
I really, as I do comedy even more, I really don't know how much being funny really matters at all. For having
God,
fans.
That's such a sad place to be, but I am there sometimes.
I think it matters a lot.
I think it matters, too.
It matters to me, anyway. That, you know, if it doesn't matter to anyone else, it matters to me. But I think Dat Van does really well. I saw him at the store recently. He was very successful on stage. What he did worked really well.
Yeah, and he sells it out every time.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not just the hustling. He's definitely got something.
But I mean, he's got a point. Like, the hustling is almost more important than
it probably is.
Being fun. I mean, it's not artistically, but you do sometimes feel like, oh, my gosh, there's so many hilarious people now, you have to hustle because there are so many people that are just as funny as you, even if you're like, you know, considered the best where you are. Like, there's so many people who are just as good, or if not better, and so you have to hustle and outwork those people.
And you do see a lot of mediocre comedians getting really far from outworking everyone else.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and also it's so subjective, you know, who's to say that person's mediocre when, you know, 20,000 people follow them on Twitter or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I just feel like there's a lot of people that are just super talented, but they don't hustle at all.
Right.
And, you know, there's that comparison, too. They can get much farther on more hustle and less talent.
Definitely.
The other way around, probably.
Yeah.
That's
kind of
what I'm saying.
Yeah. I would have to
that
agree
That was a
with
very
you.
Roundabout way it's to agree sad. With you, Jeff. I'm sorry.
It's a sad thought, but
well,
I guess that's fair. This is capitalism, right?
As far as Dat Van, last Dat Van show I worked, there was a woman that wasn't Dat Van that brought in 75 people.
Wow.
So he convinces these people that he's selling them the dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like there used to be that thing like on Craigslist, like, come do the Madhouse this Tuesday and get it shown up front of executives.
But you know what works about it, though, too, with the Dat Van thing is like those people then have the show of their life. Like they'll never have a show that great again, probably. It's at the Comedy Store with him, 75 people that are rooting for them, that are laughing at everything they do. You know, they're never going to have a better experience at comedy. So in the end, it's like they feel validated probably.
Right, but then they do it. It's like always the story that I say. The dude that did a bringer show at the store on a Tuesday got a standing ovation up front of his family. And then the next night he did Winston's and bombed his ass off, and I've never seen him again.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so
I guess if you could weather that storm, that's when you know you're a real comedian. Is you get past that first bringer thing and the first failure and then keep going.
I guess.
You know? I mean, the other thing that I think is funny when bringers just consistently flop,
don't realize it.
It's really funny. We used to see a guy at the Comedy Store all the time. He would bring like the whole crowd, right? And then he would be the only one to do badly on that show. And that was pretty hilarious. I'll say his name in the break, I guess.
Is he still doing comedy?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think he got choked out by Mike Ula, and that was the end of that.
Oh, okay.
But anyways.
Mike Ula, doing God's work.
God's work.
Yeah. Haven't seen that
Choking
guy.
Choking bringers from...
Haven't seen... No, I think he was at the... Was he at the thing? The crab boil?
I don't know.
Haven't seen him in a while.
I don't know. Great dude, though. I think he was doing a podcast with Venti, so we could check for that.
Oh, yeah. They wanted me to go on.
You should do it. I think it's like just the Hang Time podcast. They mostly talk about Hugo, I think.
Yeah. They don't like Hugo.
Got to give him a lot of airtime, that Hugo.
I guess. So you said you were starting to get past at the clubs. Was that kind of from, like, Last Comic Standing, or?
I don't know. I have no idea how much that helps or what everyone knows. I'm assuming people know. I don't, like, you know, hit clubs up and be like, hey, just so you know, I did this. It just sort of all happened around the same time. I got past the Laugh Factory, and some people recommended me to the Comedy and Magic Club, and
that's a good one too, right? Those are two of the biggest. Well, those are the most difficult ones to get on, aren't they?
Yeah, they're great. I mean, and I've been past the Ice House in Pasadena for a while. So good. Yeah.
Are you in at the store in Hollywood?
I can call in for like development spots.
Okay,
but
that's cool.
That place scares me so much.
That's a scary place.
Oh, it's so scary.
It is.
Yeah.
That is.
I'm intimidated by that.
Very frightening.
All right, we'll be back. We got more with Taylor Thompson coming back. You listen to WSRadio.com, the worldwide internet talking back very flat.
Today's episode is brought to you by Film in Diego, a six-part series airing Thursday night at 11 p.m. on KPBS. Film in Diego highlights San Diego's growing film community, diverse film festivals, film history, award-winning films, and filmmakers and talent. This show is not only educational and inspiring, it will show you how diverse and talented San Diego filmmakers are. Think film and TV are just an L.A. thing? Think again. To see full episodes and clips, visit kpbs.org and search the words Film in Diego.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back, third segment.
Jeff even sings the part where they say, talk to me. Can you believe it? He changes his voice for it. It's amazing.
Yep. So anyway, let's go back to the beginning now, Taylor. How long have you been doing comedy?
I started when I was 16, but, you know, really going for it, like, the last few years, I guess.
Okay.
It's always weird. I mean, it's always weird, like, trying to say, like, how many years you've been doing it. Because, like, starting at 16, the first, like, year and a half, I'm in high school. Like, I'm not getting up every night or anything. So, I don't know. I usually tell people, yeah, like, 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Know? So, it's something that you wanted to do since you were, I mean, much younger than 16? Or was, like, 16 you saw something and you're like, I want to do this?
I don't even think I knew what stand-up was until I was, like, 11.
Okay.
So I feel like I didn't learn about it until kind of late. And then I didn't think I could do it. I really liked comedy. I didn't think I could do it, though. And even when I started, I was like, this is great, and I'm really going to enjoy this forever. But it was a while before I had the self-esteem to be like, oh, I could do this as a job. Like, I could really make this happen, because there was no part of me that was like, I'm killing it. I could do this as a career.
I feel like that's a common thing that people don't even realize that you could do it at all. They watch it on TV and they're not thinking, like, I could do that.
Yeah, like that's somebody's job.
It takes a long time for people to even build up that.
I mean,
were
your parents supportive? Your parents kind of push you into it at that age, or was it something that you wanted to do?
My dad wanted to take a stand-up comedy class, and I was a junior in high school, and he was, like, feeling the passage of time. So he's like, come on, we'll go do this comedy class. And I was like, I have to study. And he was like, come on, just come do it. It's once a week. And we went and took a comedy class.
So you went together with your dad?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so cool.
And then after the class, he went back to making money as a successful real estate agent. And yeah, I just, you know.
Whose class did you take?
It's a comedian named Nazareth. He is he's like mostly does churches and corporate stuff. So that's where I started, because he had me like open for him and stuff, and sent me to, you know, small rooms that he didn't necessarily have time to do or want to do, because he has family and is providing for them.
Uh-huh.
Is like, no, I can do a couple hours. I'm not going to go do that. And yeah, it just kind of snowballed from there. And I went to college and I was like, you know, comedy's fun, but I need to get a degree. And then I went to this college and I wasn't getting up to do stand up. And I just like watched Jerry Seinfeld's Comedian documentary for 2 months and just like cried alone in my triple dorm room. And then dropped out to go to community college and started doing comedy back in Southern California. And
so where were you
going
to
where did you go to college?
Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where I went.
They have no comedy scene up there, do they?
They have a festival that I have never done. But yeah, there weren't any rooms or anything. There aren't any clubs or anything like that. But they do have like a comedy festival. The school had a improv team that I went to see a couple times. And they were pretty funny. So part of me was like, maybe I'll do that.
Uh-huh.
But I fear people. So
have you done any improv?
No.
No.
No. I'm so terrified of letting people down.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Improv people are totally different from stand-up.
Totally
people.
Different. They're like friendly and outgoing
supportive.
And open. Supportive. Yeah.
There's a lot of teamwork.
A lot of teamwork.
A lot of trust.
Yeah. They're just like floating. They're like synchronized swimmers. And we're just kind of like, give me that piece of the bed frame, Jack. Like, we're just struggling to.
It is a weird thing.
Save up water.
You know, the duo act we did, I was telling Marianne about it, that is the closest thing we ever do to improv.
Right.
Is trading material back and forth, but it's still not like what they do.
Right.
Have you thought about trying to do? I took a class with Dan Venti, and I thought it was like so much fun.
Name dropper.
But, well, it's the only improv experience that I have was him teaching a class in his living room to us. You know.
I've thought about it. It's just like to really get into improv, to like take class, because my roommate in LA like is interested in sketch and improv, and the classes are just so expensive. If you want to do like UCB, or I think the cheapest is like Nerdist has a school now.
Yeah.
But it's so expensive to take, because you have to take classes, you have to get to each level, and they have to approve you and get on a house team. And it's like comedy, you can just go to an open mic and do comedy.
Right.
And it's just,
you don't have to rely on anyone else. Really.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to talk
and
to
it's
anyone.
Not as much acting. Do you do any acting, or did you do any acting?
I mean, well, it's weird. When I was a kid, I really wanted to act, and I did theater and stuff.
Yeah.
And as I've gotten older and I've done more stand-up, it's almost like that performance need has been satisfied, and now I feel like I can't act like if somebody needed me to. Uh-huh. Maybe it's just because now I know people who really do act and are good at it,
that
I'm like, oh, I can't.
So you don't audition for things like that while you're up there?
No, I just want, like, my agents tried to send me on a couple things. I'm like, just send me on, like, comedy stuff, like panel things, and where I can like be myself, or like at most like send me on like a friend who eats pizza every third episode. Like I'll be the chubby friend. Like I'm not trying to get, you know,
you don't want to get into that world so much.
No, because I just feel like there's so many people, they move from like Iowa and they're beautiful and they've been, you know, watching Nicole Kidman interviews since they were kids. I'm like, why would I try to? Because I hate it when like people who want to be actresses try to do comedy as stepping stone into it. But
that's what they do. You got to get them back. You got to do the opposite. How annoying is that? You always see those people. They'll be at the booked at the ACC or whatever, and it's like Steve-O doing stand-up or something. You're like, damn it, that's our thing.
I know. But it's all they want, and this is all I want. So I'm like, if we just stay on our sides, this will be okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like you've got to break into that if you're in Hollywood, because
that's how you get people to shows between
gigs, right? To keep the attention.
I know. Well, that's what you were saying, Jeff, is like, it's not about being funny anymore. It's about having credits. And that is a lot of it, like in terms of getting booked on the road and stuff, is just having TV credits so that they know people will come out. And
right. That's all that matters. Yeah. Who would you rather book? Somebody that's really funny, or somebody that can bring your club 100 people?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Well, that's sad, but.
Yeah. It's the same reason Donald Trump's doing so well. It's like people are just like, I know him. Like,
yeah. That's true. You know. Just name recognition.
I still can't get over that he might win.
Oh, like, my God.
I just can't.
I can't even
what
talk
a scary,
about it.
Scary, scary, scary
it's
thing.
Just. It's not even scary. I mean, every president's going to be terrible. But he's a reality star. Like, how is he?
I know. I guess with enough money, you could do almost anything.
Is the situation going to be the next president?
The situation.
Oh, gosh.
Vice President Snooki. Yeah. Finger on the button.
Like, how far are we going to go? It's just crazy.
It's unbelievable.
Did you see the John Oliver Last Week Tonight clip where he just took
the Trump thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Just took him down.
Yeah. It's tough, though, because he, like, we keep mentioning him. It's like the demon grows. He just, like, he's so famous now.
When he talked about how big his dick was.
I know, like, right? He really is. He's like a, not a self-aware.
Yeah.
He's like a comic that doesn't know he's terrible. You know what I mean? And it's still getting a lot of attention.
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
But
I couldn't believe he said that.
My dad at one point was like, you know what? He says it like it is. And I was like, oh, don't stop. Like, please, no, don't be that guy. Like,
just because you lie really loudly, it doesn't mean you're saying it like it is.
Or like when people say horrible things and like, well, they're honest. It's like, yeah, they're honest about how horrible they are.
Right.
Like, that's not good.
That's the only thing that's honest about him, is that he's revealing what a terrible person he is. Because the rest of it is all lies and bullshit, you know?
Yeah. People who like that about Trump, I feel like, are people who just have a very powerful id and are just like, finally somebody.
Yeah, I think there's people that are really afraid, you know. They're afraid of life and all these other, you know, things are manifesting, like they are reinforced by his hate and his fear, so it makes them feel better about their own, you know.
Ooh, so topical, you guys.
I know. We don't normally get into this. So,
I know.
About farts.
I don't even know anything about politics. I just think it's crazy. I mean, for me, I'd like to Bernie Sanders to win simply because I like Larry David.
Yeah.
And I want to see four more years of him on SNL.
Four more years of Larry David.
That's such a comic answer.
That's a great answer.
But do we want Tina Fey to stop doing Palin? I know it would be bad, but think of the skits.
Yeah. It would save the show.
Oh, that's so true. It's really hard to be political. I know that it's like important, but... Man, man, for comedians, it's like you were talking about earlier. If you were on the bus, you'd just be thinking about, how do I write jokes about this?
Yeah.
So it makes it really hard to, like, take it seriously, you know? That's why I admire Tamer, because he seems to be, like, serious about it and writing serious material.
Political jokes,
which is difficult to do, I think.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm very impressed by people who can do that successfully.
You know, just bringing it back to material, like, if you don't really believe in it, it's tough to sell it to the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's why, like, I've been troubling to have new materials, because I don't really believe in it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, because I don't really believe in anything.
I believe
that
in
too.
Nothing.
I'm struggling to find.
He's a nihilist. I believe in nothing.
I do feel that way sometimes, where I'm like, I don't really have any strong opinions, because I'm so young, and I feel so incomplete as a human being, that I'm like, I got to develop some opinions.
Yeah.
I got to read more or something. But even if I had a strong opinion, I feel like that would come off as so ignorant, because I'm 22. And anything a 22-year-old feels strongly, like, that can't be right.
That can't be right.
That smells a little off. You know what I mean?
It's good to be that self-aware, I think.
I guess. I
remember Zoltan was talking about, he has a bit about how his political stance sways.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Me and Ryan talk about this all the time. Yeah, but he just agrees with whatever the last person told him.
Yeah, like, that's so Obama! Fun. And then the healthcare. Yeah, healthcare is great. I love healthcare. I love being healthy. I don't want to... So, yeah, it just changes depending on who's in the room.
Yeah.
But he's pretty opinionated when he's by himself. Like, you listen to his podcast, and he's got his own opinions. But I think in a group, it's like swaying. You don't want to be hated, so you sway whatever way people are going.
Yeah. I just try to stay quiet.
No, Jeff's like, I don't care.
I really don't, but I know that I'm ignorant when it comes to politics.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I don't know. It's just, do you guys tell every joke that you write or think of?
No.
Okay.
Some of them die in the notebook.
Gosh, sometimes I'll post something and I hate it and then I'll delete it.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing. You know, if you post something
especially
on Twitter.
Especially people, like, respond to it on Twitter. Yeah. And they're like, that was good. And you're like, stop it.
No, it's gone.
There's no record.
It's already been retweeted.
Yeah. Don't take a screenshot.
Well, because it still shows up on the feed sometimes.
Yeah.
When it's, and then people will try to like it and won't let them because it was deleted.
Yeah.
So you're not really getting rid of it totally.
That's where I test stuff out. But then if it's terrible, I'm like, ooh, I'm not doing that on stage.
Yeah.
Actually, most of those things I don't do on stage.
Yeah, I don't. It's more stuff like I've been writing. Like, I have notebooks and notebooks of stuff that I never even tried.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, I don't know. It's annoying, really.
It's annoying.
I wish I would just do it.
We should do it duo style. We'll
I know.
Do all our notebooks of stuff we never do.
We should do. That'd be wonderful.
Bomb like hell.
Yeah. Have you ever gone up with someone at the same time?
No, I've never done that.
It's fun.
It's fun sometimes.
Yeah. We've had some bad ones, but it's been more fun overall.
It'd be good. Hey, we got one more segment with Taylor Thomas coming back. You're listening to WSRadio.com, worldwide internet. Talk to you back in 3 minutes. Bye!
Today's episode is brought to you by Film in Diego, a 6-part series airing Thursday night at 11 p.m. on KPBS. Film in Diego highlights San Diego's growing film community, diverse film festivals, film history, award-winning films, and filmmakers and talent. This show is not only educational and inspiring, it will show you how diverse and talented San Diego filmmakers are. Think film and TV are just an L.A. thing? Think again. To see full episodes and clips, visit kpbs.org and search the words Film in Diego.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
Turn my mic up. That would help. Yeah. Turn them on.
There we go.
Turn them
I just
up.
Noticed the intro to you is Jeffrey Bilodeau.
Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Do you ever go... Did your mom write that in?
If I was in trouble.
I've never heard you go, Jeffrey.
If I was in trouble, that would be Jeffrey.
Jeffrey!
That'd be the only time. So before the break, we were talking about writing. Do you, like, ever set time to write? Or
yes.
Okay.
I've been trying to do that every day, especially now that it's, like, my job full-time. I'm like, well, there's no excuse.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I can't go see 3 movies this week and not set aside time to write every day. I've been trying to be really good about that. I really am one of those people, like, I need to sit down and write because it's not like stuff's just always coming to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no matter what I'm doing, like, I really do. I go out to things thinking, like, oh, I hope this, which is not the way you should,
hope
you should live your life.
Material.
Oh, yeah. A friend of mine from high school got married, and my best friend was like, we have to go. And I was like, do we have to, though? Like, what if I'm busy? And she goes, come on, we have to go. And I was like, I better get a bit out of this. And I did. And it's been great.
It was worth it.
And I was like, all right, that's a good wedding. Like,
yeah.
If I don't get a bit out of your wedding, if it's just a nice wedding, it's a wasted wedding.
I know. Isn't that sad?
It's so
hard
sad.
To be in the moment and live life.
Yeah.
I went on a date, and that's the best thing that came out of the date. It was like, oh, I got a new bit out of this date. I mean, the date was good, but the bit was better, you know?
Oh, yeah. Because that's like the gift that keeps on giving.
Yes, because we only had that one date. You know, that's gone, but the bit, you can keep going.
The bit lives on. Yeah. Turn that into cash.
Maybe I got to start actually dating women.
Yeah.
Just sleeping with them.
Yeah. Or either that or you got to be dirtier because your material is too clean for that kind of subject matter, you know?
Yeah, it's just not believable either. I don't think people think with women. So,
that's funny.
People are like, I don't know about that.
I'm buying this character. Yeah. That's funny.
So it's like I can't even talk about my real life.
Yeah.
So, that's a little tough. So like an hour a day or something like that?
It just depends. I try to do at least an hour.
Okay. Does it depend on what time that helps?
How much time I have, you know, because if I'm traveling all day and I have like a layover, I'll try to like, you know, sit somewhere because I'm very much like I can't really write at home most of the time because there's too many distractions. Mm-hmm. I have to like go to a coffee shop and sit down and like really just.
You write with a pencil or pen or you like going in your phone and you're typing it?
I do pen and paper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. But that hasn't always been the case. I've gone through phases where I'm like, I need my computer. I need to just like free type.
What's that thing that Seinfeld talks about? He doesn't like writing on his computer because of that little flashing cursor that's just like, what do you got? Come on.
Oh, huh?
Let's
funny.
Go. Yeah. He's like, no, pen and paper.
Yeah.
That's how you write as well, right? You write on pen and paper?
I mean, I always carry around a notebook, and then I'll think of an idea, and
it's
I'll write it in.
It's easier to carry around, yeah.
Yeah, and then if I'm not a pussy, I'll try it out on stage.
Yeah.
I'll write it on stage for the most part, which I think maybe that's made me lazy, because I'm not writing. When I first started, whenever I thought of an idea, I'd write front and back of the page of that idea, and then try all of it, and then see what works, and then whittle it down to what actually works. But I haven't done that in years. I mean, more it's just writing on stage for the most part.
Seeing what flies right when you're up there in the moment.
Yeah. I mean, I'll write it down in my phone if I have an idea or, you know, do like a Twitter draft or something.
Yeah, that's what I do too,
yeah. Yeah, just and then, you know, you really sit down and you go through your phone and you're like, all right, what did I have an idea? Oh, that was something. And then you sit down and you try to write it out. Or at least that's what I do.
Yeah.
If I'm home and I don't have anything to like a show at night or a spot, I try to like go walk around like my neighborhood or like I have a Starbucks down the street from my house or I'll like go to the Grove and like walk around and then like go to there's like a Barnes and Noble there and I'll like go to the Starbucks and try to write and you know just trying to like get out and like be like, is this what people do?
What are real humans doing?
That's all I do is just work, you know. I don't really do like people always like.
That's what most people do. Is just work. So
other people
about
have hobbies.
Yeah.
What are your hobbies? Do you guys have hobbies?
That's the thing. Comedy was my hobby, and now it's my job. And so now, what's my hobby? It's like, well, I know. It's just like there's just not enough time in the day. Like I got to get up. I have to like eat for part of the day. I have to work out, and then I have to write for part of it. But I don't have anything to write about. I've been feeling like I just need to take a week or so off, and like go. Do something like go on a trip, like go experience something, like
go camping or something.
Go camp, because I just feel like I'm so young. Like other people can be like, oh, well, I'll talk about my childhood, or I'll talk about my 20s, or I'll talk about my college experience, and I'm like, oh, I just skipped all that.
You need more life experience.
I need more life experience. It's horrible. Like I can only speculate on what life will be like for so long. Like, I get people coming up to me after shows, and they're like, you are so wise beyond your years. And
I saw that the other day when we did a show. This woman came up and said that to you.
Everyone always says that. I'm like, it's just because I'm
bad
at being my
age.
It's a very good compliment, but it feels like, I'm like, I'm not, though. I don't know anything. I'm just speculating.
You just don't reveal that on stage.
Yeah, but I always thought, like, your comedy is like you're a 35-year-old woman, not a 22-year-old woman.
I know. I'm 84 in my head and heart.
Like, so I think whether it's...
Well, you started early. That's part of the reason, right?
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, because Seinfeld always says, don't bring it back, like, how long you've been doing comedy is how old you are, maturity-wise.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So if you've been comedy
in
6 years, even you're a 6-year-old.
Oh, yeah. That's funny. But you came up through did a lot of church shows. Do you do a lot of those? I mean, we did that one recently, but do you do many of those still?
I don't do as many now. I do them, you know, I'll do one like every, I don't know, like 4 months.
Are those always the best? Because everyone that I've done, just, you know, outside of a couple, of a couple in Michigan, were amazing shows.
I know, I do need to be more grateful because you know, sort of credit that to how I got polished quickly when I was first starting. Because, you know, you're going up in front of audiences you did not deserve. and, you know, getting paid
usually
and getting too much
sizable
time.
Sizable audience.
Yeah, too. You know, there'd be like 500 people, and they're like, you can do 15. And I'm like, I've been on stage 8 times. Uh-huh. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And then you do clubs. And see, I went the other way where I did the churches, and then I did a club, and I was like, this is amazing. Mm. Sure, there's only 20 people here, but they get comedy. You don't have to worry as much about what you're going to say and be as careful. So I think they both have their...
That's funny.
You know,
I had the opposite, you know.
Yeah,
coming
you
up
the
through
and I think
30 bars and then going into clubs.
Right.
Like, and then going into
it's
churches.
It's easier
after.
To get jaded that way, too, because, you know, when you're doing open mics, you're just doing shock comedy, you know,
right.
to other comics. That's
right. So it's a different trajectory coming up, starting clean and in the church thing than the way most of us started open mics was out dirtying each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we are coming up to the end. What was the worst show that you've done so far?
Oh gosh, I did a college show that was not a show. It was like a talent competition for a bunch of Greek life students. So I went in, and even the room, there was like a balcony and there was a lower level, and it kind of all went around me in a U shape. And they were like, you're going to host. So, like, you're going to go out and you're going to introduce yourself. They didn't tell anybody who I was or what I did or what I was doing there. And I had to introduce all these kids, like, balancing eggs on their face and juggling and wearing tutus. And there's a talent portion. And basically, my job was to go out and do jokes while they had technical difficulties, or like Tiffany got into her tutu for her dance. That was not a dance. It was just her being slightly buzzed and moving around on stage with the music. And all the kids were drunk, and they were screaming and chanting. And there was this girl, she was the worst, and she came up to me after the first, because I tried to do a couple jokes and nobody was having it. And I said, okay, we're going to get this started. And she goes, you know, they'll quiet down if you just tell jokes. And I said, all right. So I went out and I told about 2 minutes of jokes before somebody started cheering for Manny again, who was the crowd favorite on the fraternity side. And then I got off and I was like, was that good? And to the point where afterward, the students were like apologizing to me that had hired me. They were like, we're really sorry. We didn't know it was going to be that bad. They were so rude. We're so sorry. I was like, it's fine. Can you just take me back to the hotel? Is that envelope my check? Thank you. I earned that.
Oh, gosh. That was recently then, huh?
I mean, that was like in the last year, probably. It was probably about a year ago.
Okay.
It was when I started doing college.
Then quickly, what is your best show?
Yeah, you got a best?
Oh, gosh, there's been a lot of them. I don't know. I don't know that I have like a best show. There's been a lot of great ones at comedy clubs that are packed, and you're just like, this is the best thing that's ever happened.
Yeah. And I have to say, it's normally people are like, oh, there's so many bad shows I can think of.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there are a lot of bad shows, too, but you know.
But where can people find you? You get Twitter?
My website is ttomcomedy.com. I am at Taylor Tomlinson on Twitter and ttomcomedy on Instagram.
All right. And they can see you tonight at the Madhouse, two
they
shows?
They can. Yes, two shows, 7:45 and 9:45.
Thanks for doing the show.
Thank you for having me.
We'll talk to you next week. WSRadio.com, worldwide. You can talk about right now.